you said there would be a lot of stuff about scoping.
Yes.
There wasn't very much scoping on this.
There was. Question 15 and 16 were a lot of scoping.
But they weren't really the style of scoping that was on the assignment.
Right. They weren't right. They weren't the puzzle type questions.
Should we expect a question like that on the final?
Would you prefer something like that on the final? So the puzzle ones, I was thinking they're good exercises to go through, and in fact, actually, I would encourage you to try making your own, or I can try making some up if you want one to go through yourself. But I want you to do the same kind of analysis to the regular code. Like, basically, I wanted you to go through what was in scope. I mean, that's what the whole thing with the handler function was saying, you know, knowing what was that in scope, where was that getting its data? It was because it was in the scope of the make room handler function was being called, which had that in the arguments. So that was the scoping question right there, and understanding how that fit in, and also understanding how when you call, app get is not called each time, you know, each time a function is called, so. Every time a page requests, apt-get is not called. That's for registering things. So that's what I wanted to just... So now I'll tell you, in the... There's a number of things with callbacks and stuff in the... it will be in the final, because all the stuff with AJAX and registering handlers and client-side JavaScript and stuff, it's all... it's all in that style. So I'm not gonna try making. I try not to on actual tests to make puzzles that are just puzzles for the sake of being puzzles. I prefer it, unless there's something I really want to test, but I prefer to make it in a functional context. And you noticed all the characteristics of the code I put on there were there because it provided certain advantages. Like make room handler wasn't there just to confuse you all, was because, wow, I can make, you know, do this dynamically. So, useful programming patterns as opposed to just brain teasers. I don't feel comfortable putting complete brain teasers on, because I know for a lot of you to really, some of the really nuanced parts, you know, some of the puzzles I'll go like, I'm not quite sure what exactly that's going to do. And I'll put it through interpreter, but in the context of a working program, you should be able to figure out the semantics. Fair?
I don't know, this might be like a silly question, because it's probably obvious or something, but how do you actually make your own callback? Because a lot of the callback functions that we use are built into system functions.
You're making callbacks all the time.
Is there...
Every time you write function, when you do at get, or do something like that, and what you give in the second argument is a function, you've made a callback. There's a million callbacks just in that code that's on the final. Those are all a callback is a function that you pass somewhere else that will be called at a later time. That's all a callback is. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm used to seeing, like, a callback function slot in, like, a lot of the standard functions that we see, but, like, let's say we just want to make an add function.
Oh, you're saying you want to make a function that takes a callback.
Yeah.
You just have to have an argument, and then that will be a symbol that will be passed a function, and then you just call it. Put parentheses after it.
That will always be called after the function.
Well, it depends on where you put the call. You call it at the beginning of your function. You don't have to call the callback function at the end of your function. You could call it at the beginning, but normally you call it after you've done your work. Then you just put it in the end. Does that make sense?
A
little bit. I see what you mean. How do you make your own functions use callbacks?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll try to see if I can stick something like that into...
It's So the reason I'm asking is because on the assignment, when I was trying to build my own like timeout pinger, I would sometimes get like a either locking or it would just keep calling the timeout, and it was because I couldn't do it my own callback.
Well, the idea with the timer is that you call, you reset the timer after the timer expired.
Yeah.
In the timer handler, you set the timer again. Or just outside of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was doing that, but it was weird.
Okay.
I fixed it.
I've gotten most of the solutions from the TAs, and I want to edit it some and things, so next, you know, by Friday, you guys will have a full solution for assignment 3 that you can look at and pour through and see how it compares to your own stuff. Okay? So now what I want to talk about is... I'm going to try drawing out some screens first. So, I'm going to tell you a little bit of my vision for what the new adventure game editor playable game should look like. And then I want to walk through how you would implement this and what kind of basic strategy we have. So, first we have adventure editor. And so I'd have two options, edit, play. Right, just like we had an initial start screen in our code, we'll have this to start up. Should we bother having a name entry for here?
No.
We could. We haven't been using it. So we can probably drop that. But so you have edit or you play. So play, that would take us to the old, so what do we call the URL in the Ajax one?
Game.
Yeah, / game, right.
So /game.
And so this would show a room, you know, so this would be a title, description, exits. So what should the editor look like?
Make new or edit existing?
So you're saying make new or edit existing. Okay, so if we go to edit, should it maybe list the current rooms that are there? So this will be / edit. Now I would suggest this, so this will probably be, this will be just /  editor. And so we'll have a list of, so I would say we divide the display into two parts. One is a scrollable list with the rooms. So sick bay, engineering, and let's say you highlight one of these rooms, or one of these selections. Highlight this, then I'd say up here, what would appear is title, but we'll have the name, title, description, and the exits. So these are all, the name, title, description, those are all text editor boxes, right? Although I would suggest you can't change the name. You can just keep that. We can just handle that code from the back end, because if you change the name of a room, when you hit, then we'll have a little save button. Save and a cancel button. Although probably the cancel button probably isn't very necessary. Cancel, what I think would do is just revert this to what it was before. Hey, then go back. Quit. These are probably over there or something, but. So you have a save, cancel, and quit buttons. We'll have a list of rooms. This will get populated as you click on them. There's just one thing here that's a bit tricky in how we're going to represent it.
Creating a new room?
Well, creating a new room is pretty easy, right? We just need to have a button that says new. Okay, so create a new room, new, and then it just populates this, and whenever you hit save, it'll create a new room. Although, actually, all you have to do to create a new room is just change the name when you hit save, and maybe you have something that confirms that, do you want to create a new room?
But then how would you change the name of a room?
Well, that's what I'm saying is when you put, we would put a dialogue saying, change the old room or create new room. You know, this room was called this. So you were saying?
Delete existing room.
Ooh, delete.
These are useful operations.
What about exits? How many exits can we have?
As many as there are existing rooms, minus one.
Right. We could have as many rooms as there are, minus one. That's how many exits we can have. So how are we going to allow each room, each exit to be added or removed?
Parsing with commas or semicolons?
Okay, that's one way to do it. I could have a text field that parses it on the server side. I regard that as kind of gross. Oh, what other kind of GUI widget kind of things would you see for adding?
Options. You can select the rooms that are available for your exit.
Huh. That's nice. That you don't have to enter it. You can just yeah. have a multiple selector.
Yeah.
Now, there's one thing that's a little confusing there. It's because we have the selector for which room we're in. So this one should probably be like just a single element that you just click on that pops up and then shows you a scrollable one. Otherwise, it's just one element. And that one is a multiple selector. So going through this, we should be able to keep entering rooms, adding rooms. Seeing this now, there's of course nicer features you could have for an editor. Like, wouldn't it be nice if it drew you a picture and showed you how all the rooms were connected? Because we don't really have directionality implied in this map. Like, a lot of traditional adventure games have north, south, east, west, and things like that. We could do that, but that's making things a little more complicated. We can just keep it simple like this. But you enter in all these things, we can see the rooms individually, and then we can go over and then we can say quit, save, over here, play the game, and play through it. So, if we're going to go through all the trouble of doing this, the back end had better not trash it every time it gets restarted. So, we're going to put all this in a MongoDB database. So all we're going to do is we're going to put rooms that will go to a MongoDB collection. and the rooms will have the same fields as the current rooms. And the nice thing about doing this with MongoDB is you later decide you want to add features to the rooms, you can just add fields, and only the rooms that actually need those fields can have them. Like if you want to add objects or something else, you can just add it, and only, not every room has to have that field. Yeah, but what will this look like on the server side? What functions, what routes do I need to define? How much of this is going to be client side? And how much of this is going to be server side? Let's think. So for this part of the game, everything was resident server side. You could put everything client side here. Considering about the amount of data, you could probably just download the whole room list and you edit it all on the client side. The problem is if anything messes up in the browser, you've lost all that data. So probably whatever you download here, you have to constantly be saving it back to the server. So one option is the entire room data structure comes down here, or you can incrementally download it as you interact with it. So on the server side, I have to have a JADE page that would define this. I need a JADE page that defines this. I need a JADE page that defines this. So I just need functions for handling those. Because there's you know, the routes are editor, slash, and game. What other routes would we want?
Post route for
CI. So we need some posts. What would we want to post? So room data. So we want to be able to do it. What? Update a room. So is update room and create room a different thing?
No.
No. Then create room is a. So the reason why is you could have update room be an update for a room that doesn't exist, and so then it just creates it. Kind of a style thing. Yes? So on the server side, you always have to check to see whether it's there or not. Yeah. Because remember, the client is going, you have to take into account that they may do all kinds of stupid stuff here. This might be broken, there might be some injection attack, you don't know what. So you always have to check it on the server side. You can't assume that whatever the client says actually reflects what's in the database. So this is a good question. What is a basic process of handling the update or create room? What's the algorithmic thing that we need to be doing? You need to first check, so for update, does the room exist? Yes, we have to edit document. No, add document. Should it just add whatever the editor gives it? No. What if it's trying to specify an exit that doesn't exist for a room that doesn't exist already? Now, this gets it to be, now, if you're doing things completely consistently, you can see a little bit of an irritation with your editor. Because now you're going to create a room that's going to have 5 exits. If none of those exits actually exist, you're just going to have those, you're going to have to sit there, create each room individually without any exits, and then edit those rooms to add in the exits. Is there a better way? How would you do it? Well, it's a tricky thing when what you're doing is you're trying to create a data structure, and the data structure doesn't have to be consistent in state at all times. And in general, you do want it to be consistent in this sort of editor. So what you could say is that if you allow it to just have exits that don't exist, you automatically create those exits. So what you could have is a little checkbox
create exit rooms.
There's so many boxes, there's so many buttons and stuff on this now.
It's getting kind of ugly, isn't it?
There's like 5 buttons on my one screen plus some checkboxes.
Yep. This is not, I wouldn't call this a good design right now. This is, well, actually, well, so, the thing, so this starts getting messy. This is one of the hard parts when you start, this is one thing engineers typically don't think about when it comes to usability, is we're now starting to get a very cluttered interface. And that's why I was saying some of these things I want to remove some of these operations. Do we really need a create and a, do we have to have a create and an update button? Do we even necessarily need a save button? It could just save in the background. Right? Yes?
Well, just another thing to think about that I thought of with the exits. Are all exits two-way?
Hmm.
And so, like, if you say that one room has an exit here, would it go to that exit room and add an exit back into the room that you're working with?
In general, in an adventure game, you don't want that.
Yeah.
If you can get back to the other way, then you can, because you want to allow for people to create really strange maps.
But otherwise, you have to go through and edit each one that you make so that you can get back if you're supposed to be.
So, create exit rooms, create backlinks. Yes?
If you delete a room, what happens to the other rooms that have the... Did you mention that already?
No, I didn't. Yeah, then you have the dangling pointer problem. Delete a room now. Yeah, I would think you would have to remove it from all the other ones, but...
So couldn't you solve this with a data structure? Like, this seems a lot like you could use a graph.
Well, it is a graph.
Yeah.
We're implicitly representing a graph.
Well, kind of. Yes, but I mean, like, the data object of the rooms that we've looked at so far are just data objects.
Mm-hmm.
But if you converted them into, like, a graph with edges and vertexes...
How would you represent that in JavaScript?
Like a tree-type object, I'm
How
sure.
would you represent a tree?
As a graph?
I'm saying is, what data structures do you have in JavaScript? You have arrays, and you have objects.
Are there any libraries for graphs?
Well, every node, you can create a node as an object. The links, they can be like arrays to all your connections.
Which is exactly what we have.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to make a graph.
That's exactly what we have, if you look at it, is that it's... The room's data structure is a graph.
Yes,
sir. I mean, is that... Are the edges bidirectional? They're really, you know, unidirectional edges. But that's perfectly fine in a graph. So let's pause here for a minute so you can just contemplate this for a second. But what's noticed is that just for this really simple adventure game, our editor is kind of looking like crap already, just been trying to do the basic things. So, let's think about how to not make it that way. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. So, as I said, don't panic about midterms. If you, average was 29. If you bombed it, it's okay. You will have opportunities to do that, and also the grades in general on this was lower. I will be curving things at the end of the term, but let's see how everything falls out. But again, the big thing is to see what you did not understand and make sure you correct that. So let's back to our design problem here. Things started getting messy. Where did things start getting messy? In the editor, in the editor, what aspect of the editor is messy? I mean, is editing the titles of the rooms and the descriptions of the rooms and stuff, is that messy? No, that's pretty straightforward. That's simple.
The messiness happens when we start getting into links, where it affects other rooms where we have to check, does this room exist, or where it may alter some aspect of another room.
So the worst mistake you can do in designing an interface for your program is to make the interface exactly match the underlying data structures you have. Basic mistake. Never do that. Sometimes you can map them pretty nicely and they can be isomorphic and it's all good. But when you start trying to map your data structure and realize that there's all kinds of constraints and consistency and incomplete data and other things, you go, oh, that's the wrong way to do it. Never let the user see that. That's not the view they should get.
Isn't that like an advantage to use relational databases? So you can remove something and everybody that has that connection just drops?
No, this has nothing to do with relational databases. Because, and in fact, you can organize your tables to make that easier or not. But you're still, at the end of the day, going to have a linked data structure, whether it's across documents or across tables or whatever. I mean, it's a fundamental problem. And your program's going to have to worry about that. And your program can have logic to make sure of things. But the question is, how do you make sure the user doesn't deal with that?
Giving them the option.
Exactly.
If you give them the option, they will abuse it.
Yeah. Or they'll get confused by it. So the whole, what I would say is you don't want the interface to do all of that at once. You're trying to do too much. I'd say what we have working pretty well here is something for editing the descriptions and titles of rooms. But for the exit editor, you also need an exit editor. And this is a completely different thing. Right? What this is going to say is, this has to have some representation of every room and how it's connected to every other room. And whether that can, that connection should potentially be sometimes one way and sometimes the connection should be two ways. There's a lot of ways to do this. Some that are very elegant, some of which are very ugly. You could think of this as a graph, where you visualize the graph and have each of nodes, and then you would just draw lines between them. For this, I think that might be kind of messy. What would be...
You could use an matrix, like an array to represent the rooms, and the second array to represent all their exits.
Really?
Yeah. Each position
is... I mean, I can see that as a data structure.
Yeah.
As a data structure, sure, that's kind of thing. I'm just trying to think of how that would look on screen, because you have all this duplication. It's very sparse. And, yes.
I do maybe auto-completed tags, like treat the exits like tags. Start typing them and then auto-complete based on existing rooms. And if they enter like a new room, then you auto-create that.
So you would do it in a separate editor, or you do it
in
the same? The only thing is, how do you check for typos? Well, I guess that's what the autocomplete does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or the other option is, you need the drop-down list. Have a list of the rooms that already exist and the option to create a new one.
Right. The trouble is you can have arbitrary numbers of exits. Right? Right. It's not just, if it was just one exit.
You're adding the exits, then...
You could have something. You could do something where you say add exits, and it could just be you have one exit. You'd say delete an exit, and you can just delete them, and there'd just be items, and each of them would be a scrollable list. And this I'm thinking here of a secondary representation, which would let you get a view of how all your rooms connect together, which you don't strictly need, but. But you want, the problem is even with the scroll down list, that makes it easy, but it doesn't give you a sense of, okay, is this bidirectional or not? Can you get here from there? I mean, you want to think that the one directional thing should be an exception, not the rule. Right? When you get trapped in a place and you can't exit it, is not the default case. Most of the time you should be able to do that. So you want to make the editor to make that the easy case is to make everything properly connected, and you have to specify something a little different to make it disconnected. So. Mm-hmm.
Does it make sense to keep track of both a to and a from list for each given room, or is that just overly complicated?
What would you want the incoming list for?
You can see at a glance what the interconnected speech room is, like how you get to that room. As
right.
opposed to where you go from.
Right. The player can't see that, though.
But you're not
but, the but, you, but right, right, exactly. So you're the editor. So you're saying that, I see what you're saying. So you're saying is don't necessarily change the data structure, but just have here saying what rooms lead here. So instead of specifying exits, you'd specify exits and entrances.
I guess on the back end, that would take some parsing to find what rooms have this as an exit. The same thing.
You can make it a doubly linked list, in effect. And we could change our data structure so it maintains both pointers. That's not very hard at all. But yeah, that's an interesting idea. I hadn't thought of that. So here, instead, now we have. Okay, my room's on. We're just kind of redoing this. We got entrances and exits. And maybe you have a little checkbox that says entrances are all entrances are exits for this room. And then you don't have to specify both. And then it grays out one. And then removes it, and then otherwise, then you can specify both. So we'd say exits are two-way. I'm going to think a little more of this, and I'll decide on the design for you all to build. But what I'll do is I'll give you the option for doing something better. I can give you some bonus marks if you want to make the editor better than the bare minimum functionality that I specify. Because I don't really want you to spend time implementing something that you think is really ridiculous. But this is all just... So, This is all the first level interface. But then the next layer, we have this problem of, yes?
Oh, I know how to do it.
Okay.
You keep a list of all the rooms, and then you keep a list of all the connections between rooms. And that way, so like, okay, your list of connections
right.
will just have two. And so say you delete room A, then you just go through the list and all of the rooms that have A in it.
Well, I'm not even talking about how we represent it to make it easy for these operations. Because, I mean, honestly, you could do order N things and use our existing data structure. But you could do better ways of representing it to fast it up, speed it up. But I'm more concerned about what will the user see.
Oh.
Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, this, I'm not thinking of the data structure problem. I'm thinking of the interface problem.
Okay.
But actually, I was moving on to the data structures problem. But the data structures problem is you can add elements to your data structure that enables you to check for data consistency in more easier ways, like adding double links as opposed to single links or something, or having a list. Like, remember, an early version of Adventure had this list of active rooms. Of course, that allowed for some weird things. So you can have these kind of operations. But there's the data structure, and then there's the logic of the data structure. Where is the logic of the data structure implemented in terms of the rules that exits have to refer to a room that already exists in particular? You can't have two rooms with the same name, at least not the room name. The title could be the same, but the room name can't be. Where should that logic be?
When you're entering the data?
So entering, editing, whatever. Yes.
It could be on the database, or it could be in the server, or it could be on the UI itself.
Right. Where should it be?
It should be at least on the server, possibly also on the UI. And if you're using a relational database, go there too.
So, I'm just trying to make sense of the music. So why do you put it in the server? Why do you put it in the client? And why would you put it into the database? You don't have to answer all that, but the question is, like, why do we want logic in these places? The logic in these places serves different purposes. So you have these sort of rules in the client to improve the interface, to tell the user that they're trying to do something stupid. That's why you put it into the user interface. But any checks you do in the client have to also be done on the server. You can't leave out the server checks because you can't rely on the client side to do things correctly, because who knows, maybe someone's just being annoying and sitting in their browser and making up post requests. They can do that. You all have seen how trivial it is to do that. There's a lot of security problems that arise from that kind of hanky-panky. So your server has to enforce all data rules. Now you might say, well, okay, so the server enforces it to maintain data integrity. The client does it for improving the interface. Why would you do it in the database? You think there's a hard and fast rule that you definitely should do it in the database, you should definitely do it in the client? So, the rules that you enforce in your database, so I tend to think of it as the rules you enforce in your database are the rules that they have to hold. no matter what. You can never have this be inconsistent. But in most applications, you need some amount of inconsistency sometimes in certain little corner cases. And that's just temporary while you're trying to do some sort of bigger operation. Often operations that involve multiple records, multiple users, larger scale things, in order to do those efficiently, you often might want to bypass checks that are done on a per operation basis and just do them all at once. And so for those kind of things, if they're enforced in the database just sees the individual operations. So the database should enforce the, let's say you can't, it really is a design thing. You could potentially have no logic in the database at all. Treat the database just as a completely stupid store. Or you can put lots of business logic into the database so it enforces lots of rules on things. I mean, in some ways, it's nice to have a lot of rules close to the database because then you know the data can never become inconsistent. But it can make certain kinds of operations less efficient, and it can make certain kinds of operations almost impossible because the database is busy enforcing things. So then you end up putting more and more of your logic into your database. So if you look at Oracle, you all have heard of the company Oracle, right? It's kind of a not small company. Owns Java, owns servers, you know. Oracle made its money on relational databases, and to this day makes relational databases. But you say, it's a database, it's got lots of storage, okay, they make a scalable database, what's the big deal? It turns out Oracle is known not just for making really big, scalable databases, it's for allowing you to program them. Oracle has its own development language in which you can implement logic in the database that the database will enforce. Oracle's real claim to fame is that you can do very sophisticated computation in the database, enforcing consistency rules. And so a lot of very sophisticated business applications have very complex logic embedded in the database. That's what an Oracle developer does. It's not just about making sure the indices are appropriately balanced and drawing the tables and stuff. It's implementing that business logic in the database. And that's so that stuff can be very complex. I would say the other reason why you'd want to put logic in a database is because you're going to have different customers of the database. So let's say, for example, it's not one web application accessing your database, but it's 20 web applications accessing your web database. And, you know, accessing your database. If all of those web applications have to enforce the same data integrity logic, think they're all going to do it right? No. Some of them are going to mess it up. So if that's the case, you want to put that logic that they all have to get right into the database because then you know they won't mess it up. So I wouldn't say there's a hard and fast rule that when you do things server-side, it should go in the database or it should not go in the database. It depends very much on application-specific things, but to a first approximation, you regard the database and the server as one thing from the outside world. I mean, that is your trusted zone. That is where you do all your operations. It's just when you split it up and then you go like, well, here's the database and here's all these other customers of it, then you have to think about these other factors. So this is a second-year course. Hopefully we'll be seeing more of these things later on. Out of curiosity, what's the mix of, how many of you are second year now? Wow. How many of you third year? Any fourth years? Okay. I'm kind of curious, are many of you taking this course and it's not required? Okay. Because there's the new calendar and then there's the old calendar. And so those of you on the older calendars don't have to take 24-6. But other students do have to take 24-6. Okay.
Things to think about for me from a course design perspective.
Okay, so in this application, we're going to be doing most of our checking on the server side, although I will put a little bit of logic into the backend database for checking a little bit of the stuff, because simply it's MongoDB, so it has JavaScript. So we can put some JavaScript into the server to do a little bit of this. But really, when you want to have a lot of rules about checking the integrity of your data in the database, you're talking relational databases. That's what they were built for. So I have a few more minutes. So now, how would you implement a key? A key that would let you into a room only if you have the key. What would we have to do to implement a key? There's things we have to change the underlying data representation and our logic, and there's things we have to change the interface. Yes?
It kind of depends on how many different types of keys there are.
Well, let's assume that. Well, what do you mean? I mean, let's assume we don't bound how many kinds of keys there are.
Like, only think of one key, and that key unlocks every lock. Just add a checkbox saying, does this room have a lock? Whereas if I need the silver key to get in this room, and the purple key to get in a different room.
Let's assume that it's multiple keys. Because it's no fun if it's just one key. That's kind of boring. Silver
then
key, purple key.
Then you also have to decide, are you going to do it, do you have different types of key, each type of key key to a specific door, or do you have one key can open, you have one type of key which can open any door, but it can only open one door per key, permanently
okay, so
unlocking that door, but the Legend of Zelda approach.
So how do we implement these different kinds of keys? So, you tell me. I think if we're allowing flexibility in the editor, I'd want to allow both kind of possibilities, if possible, unless it's going to be really hard to do. Yes.
When you pick up a key, it goes into your session states event, and then when you try to get to a new room, you send it as part of the GET request. The server checks that key against the room and sees if it's the right one.
Okay, so that's an interesting question. So if you put it as part of your session, you put it as part of your session state,
I'm not sure exactly how that part
works. So you can have the key as part of your session state because that's purely server side. I was thinking that you're about to say put it in the form or something as part of the post request, and the user can fake the key, and then that's not good. Okay, so you can just be storing the key as saying the user has the key or doesn't have the key. That can just be a variable for the user state in the session.
Yeah.
That's pretty easy. You can make a whole structure for user state and have one of them, their inventory, and they get items. One of the things they can have is a key. That's actually, I'd say, the easy part.
Mm-hmm. Would the key disappear from the room after you pick it up? Are we there?
Maybe. Maybe it disappears. Maybe it's a machine that produces keys. It's an adventure game.
Are we assuming that the keys are like hidden in different rooms and we gotta pick them up to unlock the door?
I'm saying is I want the editor to provide key functionality. I want an adventure game with keys to open locks. What I'm saying is, how do I change my data representation? How do I change my interface to allow for keys? And these are all different ways you can use them. What I'm saying is, can you give me a design that will incorporate a bunch of this? Mm-hmm.
One thing that you could do just for like the editing is, in the exits editor, when you're adding an exit, you could have an option that says, will it be locked, and if so, what key?
So we could do that for each, for each exit, we can add an option for locked. And then specify the key. Now, of course, the key doesn't have to be a key. What we could now is implement general objects. So each room has associated with it some number of objects. the user has associated with them some number of objects. It's an inventory system. A key is just one kind of object. And you have doors that they open if you're in possession of a certain object. Right? And then what you could do is say, but real, the thing I want you to note about this is that to get the full semantics of what you want is actually really tricky in an editor. Because what you're going to have is arbitrary objects. I mean, a key can do all kinds of crazy things. If you think about it eventually, opening the door may start a trap. If you put the wrong key in, if you put the right key in, the key might disappear or not. It might have other effects or something. What you're talking about is arbitrary logic changes to the world. So you won't, in general, allow yourself to be able to have an object do anything unless you give the game editor the option to add code to it. And what you're really talking about here is an object, and then you give some JavaScript code which is supposed to run in order to change this, you know, upon the object. That's supposed to potentially change the state of the player and change the state of the world when you do different operations. And you should be going, maybe we don't want a general key, do we? So, in the full general case with an editor, when you start creating an adventure game, you're specifying arbitrary logic on each operation. When you specify arbitrary logic, you basically need a full Turing complete language. And instead here, we want something a little simpler. I've got 2 minutes here. Have you all heard of inform? Inform. You all know about the classic text adventures, right? Like Zork and Adventure and stuff. So when those were created, they created a virtual machine for running those games. It's called, I can't remember the exact name of it. But anyway, people have now made a programming language which targets that virtual machine for creating adventure games. And the latest generation of it, there's this, Inform 6 is a more programming language type interface for creating adventures. Inform 7 has a natural language-like interface for creating an adventure game. In other words, you write out, say, this is a room. The room has these exits. There are these objects in the room. You do this. Yeah, this is an, X is an object. So the car is an object. It has these properties. It can do this. It can do that. And what's really great about it is it has lots of domain knowledge built into it. So it knows about all kinds of things that objects can do. It knows about keys. It knows about weapons. It knows about a lot of things that you normally do in adventure games. It's built into the vocabulary of the system. So when you read the description of one of these adventure games, it almost reads like a story. Now, the syntax is kind of more rigid and stuff, and that's the trouble with anything that looks like natural language. It's not natural language. It actually has, you have to parse it in a certain way. So that's the full generality of making something like this, is full natural language for telling a story. We won't do that in this class. But anyways, let's stop there. And on Friday, there will be another tutorial, which will be an enhanced version of the adventure game. Not all of this, but maybe a piece of this.